Welcome to Focus on the Beer. I'm your host, Ryan Hannigan, and with me is my co-host, Josh Howard, and we're here to talk about craft beer here in Colorado.
Yeah, there's your lead-in right there.
Yep, there it is. So, welcome to Focus on the Beer. This is the show where we talk about beer.
One might even say we focus on it.
I think we focus on it pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, so we had a little bit of a false start there. We had recorded an entire intro and realized that nothing was recording. I will chalk that up to baby brain for myself. I literally don't know what day it is right now because I'm up till 4 or 5 a.m. every single night. And I joke that I've seen 4 a.m. more often than I used to in my 20s with a little one-month-old. So,
yeah. Just so happens it's Tuesday.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, and so today we are here in Colorado Springs. CBC is happening up in Denver. We are regrettably not up in Denver.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen. You know, it's one of those things when it's that close, it's hard to really plan around it. And then there's also supposed to be another like bomb cyclone this week. So
yeah. Just when you thought one was good enough, you get a second one.
Yeah, there's going to be the I-25 is just going to be a mess. It's not going to be worth it. So we're here drinking some beer, going to talk about it. We've got two beers from New Image Brewing up in Arvada. The Overripe, which is one of their New England style IPAs. I just noticed that it's brewed, I think, a collaboration with the band Ripe. Which is ripetheband.com. So that's cool.
I had
drinking three of these cans already and didn't even read that part of it. So I feel like I did a disservice to myself by not checking out the music that this is inspired by.
Yay beer, boo reading.
Yeah. And in our failed intro, we exclaimed about how these 16-ounce cans that New Image is doing, they've got a really good tolerances for their labels so that you almost don't feel like it's a stickered can. So,
no gap on mine, very small one on his. It's really nice.
Yeah. And then you've got the black lipstick one.
Yeah, so this is a dark sour ale with chocolate, cherry, and vanilla.
I've had a little of that one. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
So
awesome.
And then... good old, you brought a weird one.
You know, I feel like it's my job to just bring weird stuff in here. You know, if Dragon's Milk comes out with a variant, I'm the one who shows up with it.
It's so, not bananas, right?
Not bananas.
Oh, thank goodness.
Thank God.
Gosh.
Yeah, so this is the newest Dragon's Milk Reserve Raspberry Hibiscus. So it's still their bourbon barrel aged stout with natural flavors.
So I'm wondering how much, if they put the hibiscus in, if it's going to be like a reddish tint. Because the hibiscus really brings, like, that's usually what people use for coloring for a lot of pink beers.
Yeah, so. We'll have to see.
All right.
Good thing our glasses are clear.
That's that nice overripe can. This is one of my go-to now for New England IPAs. It is just smooth, unfiltered deliciousness. So the big news in Colorado Springs, as we're pouring this, Weldworks is opening up a second location in Colorado Springs.
Speaking of haze.
And it's a little interesting. They've picked an interesting spot, West Side. If you are familiar with the West Side and you know the Dive restaurant, little small, tiny little house restaurant.
Very small.
That's where they're going in.
Yeah, it looks like they have about a grand total of 8 to 10 parking spaces.
If that.
And, yeah, it's considering the amount of people that are going to want to go there, I can imagine parking's going to be a nightmare. I mean, I don't know what their plans are.
I don't know either. It's a sixth of an acre is what the size of the property is. The building as it sits right now is about 1,200 square feet. There is a basement, I think, and then there's a main floor. There is some space for a nice patio right there, and it's got a great spot, the great view of the peak. But, like, just the egress and going around it and that intersection that it's at is already a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
That I don't know how it's not going to be more of a clusterfuck once Weldworks is in there.
Yeah. Well, and we should probably, clarify they're not going to be brewing any beer there. This is just a tap room.
Right. It's just a small little, almost satellite tap room.
Yeah.
It's almost how Brewers Republic is to Cerberus.
Yeah.
So they'll be shipping beers down here. They do say that they will be doing some special Colorado Springs only type things. So for those of you that are in Colorado Springs and don't want to make the drive up to Greeley, you'll get some of the usual things. You'll probably see Juicy Bits. We'll see their Berliner Weisses. We'll see their stouts. But then there might be some specialty things as well that are only available in Colorado Springs.
I wonder if they'll do any, like, if a portion of their can releases will end up down here too.
One would hope. I think that would be a great thing for them to do, because I know it's always just a madhouse at their facility whenever they do a can release. And if they are able to sort of split that crowd, and that all the people that are driving up from Castle Rock and Colorado Springs would then go to this location instead, might work out really nicely for them.
Yeah. And speaking of splitting that, you know, a lot of Denverites were really drinking
they were pissed.
The Haterade on this one, because why Colorado Springs?
Everyone hates Colorado Springs.
Yeah. Yeah. Why? We're not that bad. Come on.
No, it's actually, the funny thing is that we're probably one of the most like burgeoning craft scenes. If you went to Lost Friends opening this last weekend, that first day, there was a line out the door for 6 or 7 hours straight.
Yeah, I got text messages from friends who were like, I've been in line for 15 minutes and I haven't gotten a beer yet, because the line was just that long.
People were in line for an hour almost at a time. Maybe not that long, but it just seemed like it. But beer was solid. We had our collaboration tap, which sadly we only made a small batch of. I do know that they are brewing another batch of it tomorrow. So soon, hopefully in a week or so, that hazy beer will be back on. That was the first one to blow, but again, there was only a couple kegs of that.
Sure. Yeah, I wasn't able to make it, unfortunately. I was booked solid all weekend and just couldn't get down there for the opening, which I wanted to even try to go on Sunday, but just ended up being tied up the entire day, which...
Yeah, so it looks like for everyone listening, they're open Wednesday through Sunday. Monday and Tuesday closed. So if you're looking at trying to get out there, it's a great spot. That whole center is sort of... they're trying to theme it over, like, adventure and outdoor sports, and so they've got the... and things that sort of go with that. And of course, craft beer is always a great pairing with sports and things like that. So there's a coffee shop, Hold Fast Coffee Roaster, Peak Place Coffee's right there. There's a new event center that's going in there right next to Lost Friend. Mundy Ross, who ran Colorado Collective, she is heading that up with Grace Harrison from Peak Place.
Oh.
So big, huge. It used to be Advanced Auto Parts, but they moved out, and they've just got this expansive space that has a liquor license and is going to be able to be there for events. I wonder if Lost Friend can tap into that for special releases or things like that. There's a bunch of space, and if it's open, why not? But Lost Friend's right there. There's also a outdoor adventure ski and bike store, Epic, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
CrossFit gym is in the same center. So, and then a mortuary, funeral services, which is sort of out of place. But
that's been there forever, though.
It's been there a long time. But no, it's a great spot. Great, lots of parking. That's one of the things, is that even on that day where it was just packed, it wasn't too hard to find a spot to park.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of breweries are, you know, in spots where there's not great parking. Like we're talking with Weldworks, they have 8 to 10 spots in a small area.
Yeah.
Lost Friend, it's easy to get to, pet friendly. So if you bring your dog in, they're great with that. They don't have food on site. So definitely check it out. Josh will be there at some point. But yeah, it's a cool.
I was thinking of trying to go like Thursday or something, but. We're going to have to see how this weather thing shakes out.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen. It might be one of the normal things that happens with Colorado weather, where they say it's going to be horrible and it ends up being nothing. But you're in Monument. Yeah. You're going to get hit with everything no matter what.
It's going to be horrible where I am. Y'all might not get anything down here, just a little rain or something. Who knows?
So the biggest thing that I think is going to be the impact from Weldworks coming to town that I think is – at least going to be pressing for a lot of the local brewery owners. A lot of people initially, at least the Colorado Springs people, are like, but what about, you know, what's the effect going to be on Fossil? What's the effect going to be on Smiling Toad? Because they're going into that thirsty spot on 21st.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a boon for them, because...
drawing more people over there. I think my somewhat tongue-in-cheek response to that particular question was, it's good for them because people are going to see that Weldworks is packed and just hit the next closest brewery.
Right.
So one of those two is going to catch the overflow and people are like, eh, we'll come back later when it's not as busy. And that's probably good for them from, you know, a somewhat cynical standpoint. But, you know, it's not like either of them are bad breweries either. I mean, you could make a day out of just hitting the West Side breweries. You know, hit Cerberus, hit Weldworks, hit Fossil, hit the Tote.
Yep. The same with Trails and Tap Rooms over there as well. I had Kevin, their owner, email me and said, what do you think is going to happen? I'm like, you know, I think it's going to be good for you. You know, you're a block away from Weldworks. If they are packed to the gills with people and people go, oh, it's going to be a wait, you can, you know, even have someone standing over there saying, oh, hey, Trails End is over there and they have, you know, Weldworks on tap. I just told him, just make sure you have Weldworks on tap at all times and you'll be fine. You know, you are the craft, you know, tap room of the West Side. Yeah. You know, there's still Front Range in Old Colorado City, but you're further west. You're on 31st Street right there. So, right.
Do you suppose it will be, if Weldworks has a tap room here, are they going to be as interested in being on tap nearby? I mean, would it then get harder to get those kegs?
You know, so I think that's going to be a different. That's a very similar conversation to what happened a couple years ago in downtown Denver, where. Left Hand was opening up a tap room a couple blocks away from Falling Rock. And Falling Rock, Chris, you know, raised a little bit of a stink. Like, hey, you know, you are one of my main suppliers. Why are you putting a tap room in, you know, basically trying to steal some of my clientele? But I sell I sell tons of your beer. So I think there's a little bit of that give and take. And we'll have to see how it works. Right now, you know, it's just a plan. They've bought the building. They bought it... The sale went through March 19th, so I read somewhere, I think in the press release, that they're looking to try to open by July. But luckily, it's just a tap room, so that's feasible. Yeah. There's less hoops that they'll have to go through. But if they're going to do some major renovations in that building, it's going to be interesting.
Get caught up in regional building and all the inspections and whatnot that have clearly hampered other breweries getting open in a timely fashion in the past.
Right. And it's not a huge spot. It's really sort of similar to the size that Cerberus is inside.
Yeah.
At least for the public area. Mm-hmm. And so if they do something with that, the yard there and patio, and put a really good sort of beer garden in.
Which they
I think that's probably what they will do. It will be a good spot, but ride your bike there.
Yeah, somebody pointed out they're right off a trail, you know, easy to get to if you're biking down there. Ride share or bike it is probably the best advice you can give.
Or park at Wendy's.
Yeah, go in and get your Baconator walking across the street.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. We'll see how it goes. We will definitely be keeping everyone informed. We're working on getting a little interview with the Weldworks crew, hopefully at the site. We're working on that. So that will help us at least get a little bit more of a feel for what they are planning or trying to do there. But in that same realm, it's going to give them a little bit more of a foothold here in Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that Oscar Blues has opened up a restaurant here, it started changing how people talked about Oscar Blues. They were no longer that brewery from Lyons. They were, they're sort of a Colorado Springs brewery because they have a restaurant here. And I think that's where, you know, this is a satellite location. It's not a brewery location, but they're gonna sneak their way into sort of the public sentiment as being a local establishment and a local brewery.
Yeah. And considering they just opened up, you know, full distribution out here, what, not even 6 months ago.
It's going to boost their distribution down here a ton, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Because if they do end up brewing Colorado Springs specific beers, and if they package those and have them only available down here and only available at you know, liquor stores around Colorado Springs, that's something that will really resonate, I think, with the consumers down here.
Yeah.
Especially because there's a ton of craft beer people here, and you know, it's not Denver, but I think we're happy that it's not Denver.
Yeah, it's you know, our scene may not be as expansive, but
no,
you know, we've got fewer people, and I think we're in really good shape where we are. I almost kind of wonder if we're not getting close to a saturation point.
I think that's a very good point, because I think we are, in terms of just having breweries without any type of sort of standard they have to live up to. Like, we have a lot of breweries. They're not all great breweries.
No, I mean, there's a few that are, you know, below par, a few that are above par, and a bunch of them that are
just right in the middle. And I think that's where...
Sorry for the golf reference, guys. That may not have stuck for everybody. Some are above average, some are below average, some are average. How about that?
But I think that's where we get compared with Denver, is that people look at, you know, the top 30 breweries in Denver, and they're all big-name places.
Yeah.
But when you look at Colorado Springs, we have only about 30 breweries. And so you have to look at that whole, you know, bell curve of, you know, low, medium, and high places, but with a smaller sample size.
Yeah. So we're not going to have 20 exceptional breweries, you know.
Right.
We're going to have 5 or 6 that are, you know, easy recommends, you know, and then it's going to depend on what part of town you're in. A whole bunch of them that are, you know, maybe not the top one you'd recommend, but if, you know, you're on that side of town, you're like, oh, you should definitely hit this one, this one, this one. And, you know, there's nothing... There's almost none that we would not recommend.
There's only one that I would not recommend. I will put it that way. There's only one that I would not go to. And it's really only... It's odd because they've worked hard to try to not put out bad beers.
Yeah.
They've reached out to beer judges. They've reached out to homebrewers. They've reached out to other breweries trying to fix what's going on. And to my knowledge, it hasn't fixed. So I don't really know what's going on there. I wish them all the luck. I'm not going to name them, but if you know them, you probably know who we're talking about.
I'll say they're getting better. I've been in there, and they're improving.
And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's tough to see that, you know, happen slowly.
Yeah. You'd really like to see them just get right over that hump and keep trucking.
You want to see them have this, you know, a similar thing happen that happened with Fieldhouse. You know, their first couple year and a half, beers were inconsistent. A lot of it was due to they were having inconsistent yeast counts.
Yeah.
And
definitely had fermentation issues.
Beers were under attenuated, then over attenuated, then under attenuated, then over attenuated. Even though that they were sticking to good practices and sanitation. It wasn't off flavors due to, you know, mishandling of the beer.
Right.
It wasn't
cleanliness, it was yeast stress.
Yeah.
And yeast stress, depending on the yeast strain, you know, if it's over temp, under temp, you know,
you can't do much.
It'll throw all sorts of crazy stuff. You get, you know, like diacetyl, which is almost like buttery popcorn flavor. You can get, you know, a weird bitterness. You can get all sorts of, you know, green apple. Just lots of different flavors that if you stress the yeast, rush it, whatever, you're gonna get these weird flavors, and they're preventable, you know, if you pitch enough, like you said, if their cell counts were off, that's a big thing, you know, too few yeast. There's a term for it, and I think it's called diastatic pressure, and it's basically the amount of sugars that are in that liquid will actually just, you know, crush the yeast. And they won't...
Don't be able to survive.
Yeah, and so they get super stressed out, and they start doing weird things and making weird flavors when they're stressed out. You know, kind of like people. They start doing weird things when they're stressed out.
Exactly. So I think... And what happened is they switched over for a time to dry yeast, where they knew they could get a certain viability, a certain cell count, and also a... At a price point where they weren't feeling like they were dumping a bunch of money down into, you know, liquid yeast,
right?
Which can be expensive when you're doing large pitches. If you need to do a double pitch or something like that, and then we saw their beer completely rebound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them tasted different than what we, you know, become accustomed to, but it was actually for the sake that it was, you know, the way it should taste.
Yeah.
So now with their new facility, they're cranking things. They're now releasing. Little Birdie told me that test taps are going away.
Well, they put it on Facebook.
Did they?
They said they basically got like 2 test tap Wednesdays left.
Yep.
And then they're moving into this kind of, I think it's like a single hop kind of series that they want to do now.
Yeah, experimental like hops. They're doing some hazy. It's all hazy stuff. Every other Friday. So it's not Wednesdays. It's on Fridays. downtown only.
Okay.
I think they found that their East Side crowd are more of the Coors Light drinkers. And, you know, I think that's another tough thing about College Springs as being a young scene is that we still have a lot of people that are a not...
knowledge gap, sort of.
That are not craft beer fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can be said the same for the food scene. The food scene came on slow and now has picked up. But there's definitely a difference in the crowds. So they're going to do that at the downtown location. One barrel batches only. I asked if they were packaging. They're not going to package unless it starts, like, taking off.
Okay.
So I would love to see those in stores. Because as you have a powerhouse like Weldworks, if these hazy one-offs are picking up steam for FH, why not package them? Why not compete with a Weldworks and use that to help sort of rise yourself up a little bit and gain a little more traction?
Go either up against them.
Yep. Use them and ride the wave. So we'll see how those turn out. Their first one is Huelmelon, which is a very interesting one to start with because it's a very subtle hop.
Mm-hmm.
We used some in the collaboration we did with Lost Friend. And it's there, but, man, I feel like we needed to use, like, 10 times as much to even get some.
Oh, really?
It's just very, very subtle. I think it'd be better in, like, a Hoppy Pilsner or something like that. Something that doesn't have a whole lot else to compete with.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, so we've switched over to the Black Lipstick.
Yeah.
Dark Sour. This thing is...
a lot going on here, but it's, I mean, lots of nice, like, dark cherry going on. You definitely get that little note of vanilla in it. It's really nice.
That chocolate comes through nicely, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty darn tasty. Wow, it's almost got that almost chalky chocolatiness at the end of it.
Yeah, I was actually going to say I almost would prefer it without the chocolate. I think it would be the super cherry vanilla. Solid. Yeah, without the chocolate bit, but it's good.
Yeah, definitely different. So, what was I going to... Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I talked to... we have a good friend who was there on the realtor team helping Weldworks out. And they weren't able to actually ever tell us anything. They just told us that a brewery was looking at it, and we had to, like, try to guess, and they were like, I'm not telling you ever. It's like, dang it. Yeah. Thanks, Nikki. And, you know, and she's still bound by NDAs according to, you know, some of the other plans. So she's seen the plans of what they're attempting to do, but she can't say anything.
Sure. I mean, that's understandable.
And I wonder, and I this is, I mean, nothing against Nikki, but the space, just going back to Weldworks, I don't know if it's going to work. And I'm so worried. But I do think that it's a great opportunity for the west side of Colorado Springs to have.
I think if you looked at Cerberus, you know, with that sort of filter, you know, realizing what that building was and what they've done with it with their fantastic food and everything and the limited seating that they've got and, you know, fairly limited parking that they've got there.
Yeah.
They've done a lot with it. So I'll withhold judgment just based on that example alone.
Yep. We'll see how it turns out.
They've done a solid job with it.
They have space. It is, you know, a sixth of an acre, so it's not tiny, but it is small.
Mm-hmm.
But they could get creative. They could put a two-tier patio. Lots of options over there.
I think parking is going to be their biggest hurdle.
I will park at Trails End and walk over. just because it'll be easy. You'll find parking and then it'll be, you know, stop over at Trails Inn and have a beer on the way home.
Nobody heard that.
Whatever. That's not happening. Kevin, that's not happening. Don't listen to this. No, I think it's going to be good. I think it's a great thing for that side of town. And I think the biggest thing is that just to sort of go back to where, you know, Why the response online when this got announced, everybody went apeshit.
Yeah, it was straight fire. I mean, to a point where somebody said, you know, all right, so for the only non-Weldworks post of the day in the Coscraft beer group, he's like, I went to Red Lake for the first time. And people were just kind of like, hey, good for you, man.
Yeah,
but you know, but it was the only thing that wasn't Weldworks related for the entire day. I mean, it consumed
everybody.
The discourse for the day.
Yeah, and even in like the Colorado Let's Talk Craft Beer group, where that is primarily Denver group people, mm-hmm. everyone was talking about, and that's where people are going, why Colorado Springs? Why not Denver? Blah, blah, blah.
We can have nice things too, Denver.
And to talk about, you know, that's going to help sort of, it's going to be that sort of, you know, oomph to some Colorado Springs breweries to make some better stuff.
Well, and it'll also, you know, it'll bring people here.
Yeah.
You know, up from Pueblo, down from Castle Rock, maybe even down from Lone Tree. I mean, the drive down here, you know, Lone Tree, Highlands Ranch, southern part of Denver and those suburbs.
Might be easier.
Is better than going to Greeley in some cases.
Yep.
Even with the Gap construction.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing for if you're an owner or a worker for another brewery going, all right, well, what the heck? Why is there all this hoopla about it? Like, don't worry about the hoopla about the announcement. People are just excited because Weldworks makes great beer.
Yeah. And a vast variety of beers. Now, of course, there's the detractors who want to say, oh, it's all the same beer, just with different things added to it.
That's sometimes me too.
And I'm sure there's a grain of truth to that. You know, it's,
but they figured out what works and what sells really, really well.
Right. And there are certain breweries that where you taste, you're like, oh yeah, this is definitely a X brewery's beer. It tastes like their beer. And whether that's water profile or just the base way that they do things, you know, I'm sure it's a combination of that.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You know, it's, you know, speaking as a beer judge, it's kind of like, oh, I know what this is.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, there's nothing wrong with that. Having a signature is fine. If people like that signature, they're going to drink a lot of it. But you know, it's not like we in Colorado Springs don't have other breweries turning out decent, you know, hazy style IPAs. I mean, Cerberus, you know, once again, over there on the west side, you know, does fair service to hazy IPAs and other IPAs. I mean, you know, if nothing else that I've known from Josh Adamski over the years is that dude likes to make an IPA. His fandom of Stone, you know, alone, yep. informed me that he was going to make IPAs and do it well. And he's definitely done that.
Yeah, and they've got a big expansion. But I think the biggest thing, I just thought of it and realized it. Being on the west side, if you're driving from even Monument, north side, east side of Colorado Springs, Pueblo, over to the west side, you have to drive by 10 or so breweries.
At least, yeah.
So the option of you making more of a trip out of it and having that money that's coming down to go to Weldworks maybe gets sort of siphoned off to a couple other spots on the way, I think there's a very good chance of that. Or, you know, if someone's like, you know, they're coming down for a Weldworks trip, but they drive by Cerberus and go, oh man, next time let's stop by there.
Yeah.
Or next time let's go to Fossil, or next time let's go to Smiling Toad, or next time let's go to Bristol, or let's go to Red Leg. There's going to be that splintering.
And even for me, coming down from Monument, if I go to Paradox, for instance, I will often stop at Fossil on my way back into town.
Yep.
You know, if I'm coming down to Cerberus, I might hit Goat Patch on my way back through, or hit Red Leg. You know, there's things that are convenient up along the route going home. You know, hit Goat Patch and then hit Atrevida and then go home. You know, just because I live next to Pikes Peak doesn't mean that's the only place I go.
Yeah.
Although I do go there a lot.
It's only a couple blocks away. You sort of have to. No, so I think it's going to be a great thing. It just means that the Colorado Springs breweries, need to up their game consistency-wise. And we've talked about that, is where, you know, there's a lot of, every place has got some great beers, but they also have some beers that maybe aren't so great. I would even venture to say Cerberus has had beers that are not so great.
Oh, yeah. Every brewery in town, every single one of them, has had a beer that's a swing and a miss.
Yep.
You know, and whether that's, you know, not necessarily because of flaws in sanitation or infection or something like that, but it just wasn't great.
It's beer,
it was just okay.
Beer's an art form. It takes some, you know, throwing things at the canvas to see if they'll stick.
Right.
And I think that's where, you know, especially a major packaging brewery like Weldworks, a lot of the sentiment for the community is just based on what they put in packages, because that's all they've had. So they haven't really had that. They've never tasted that swing and a miss. Because I will bet my life that Weldworks has put out a beer on tap at their brewery that was not what they wanted it to be.
Spaghetti beer.
Yeah. Oh, that was it. Well, at GABF. They've done weird things that maybe didn't work and maybe were bad, quote unquote, bad beers.
Yeah.
But the thing is that a lot of fun idea,
not pleasant to drink.
A lot of people, at least in Colorado Springs and even in the Denver area, only know Weldworks from those major packaged beers. And, you know, to then compare them to a small local place like Smiling Toad, where you're going to get a crowler, and they maybe have bottled a couple things back in the day, but they're not. That's not their main focus. It's not a fair comparison.
Right.
And so, especially for, you know, a place like Red Leg or FH or Bristol or Rocky Mountain or anyone that's putting beer in cans or bottles, just double, triple check and make sure your beer that you're putting out is the best that you can put out.
Yeah.
If it's not, I would say hold it back or dump it.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to do. It's probably the worst thing, but that same thing where you're talking about, you know, how much harm did it cost you to not have things, you know, to brew on a system that's got lower efficiency. It's the same thing with, you know, releasing a beer that maybe wasn't great. And yeah. Weldworks has had that too. They've released infected Imperial Stouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of their, what was it, a s'mores? Media Noche or something.
That yeah, was something infected? Like that. But it was, you know, they've made sure that is the exception to the norm.
Yeah, and they, you know, once they realize it, they're like, you get a refund. You know, come back, we'll make it right. And they did a decent job of that. And I mean, owning your mistakes is a big thing. Hell, just today on Facebook, Cerebral was trying to sell barrel aged work from home bottles,
yeah.
And their web software just crap the bed on them, and they're like, sorry, anyone who actually managed to get an order through, your order's canceled and refunded.
They're doing
we're
it the next
doing
day.
It again tomorrow.
Yep.
And while that might piss off people who managed to get their stuff through, it's the right thing to do in a situation like that where clearly the software just was misconfigured.
Yeah.
And to well, give everyone
gives
a fair
them a, gives them a day to figure things out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, instead of pissing off half your crew, you refund the people that you know had already spent money.
Yeah, they're literally out nothing.
And then you're able to just go, oh hey, you know, everyone gets another fair shot at this.
Yeah.
So that's I think that'll just be the thing going forward, is that we'll see how our local places can stay consistent and put out the best stuff possible.
Yeah. So we've been drinking this
I don't like it.
Dragon's Milk.
God, it's bad.
Raspberry hibiscus, and it's very raspberry forward, and I get the hibiscus too because it works well with raspberry.
I hate it.
It's a bit too much.
God, the thing is, for me, it's like if you, I love Dragon's Milk. You take Dragon's Milk.
I want more stout. I want to take this and blend it back with a regular Dragon's Milk, like
right.
2/3, 1/3, or half and half, and just to see if I can hit that mix a little bit better.
I feel like it's like I had a mouthful of potpourri, and I'm trying to drink a stout through it. And so I'm just not getting enough of the stout flavor.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you there. I think I'm getting too much raspberry. I'm not feeling like the hibiscus is overwhelming me.
I think it's the dryness of the hibiscus on the palate.
I can give you that, yeah.
It's really drying, and for a big, you know, 11% bourbon barrel-aged stout, it just doesn't have that
I want the bourbon barrel-aged stout to it.
It doesn't have the heft.
Yeah.
So.
But from a raspberry and hibiscus standpoint, oh, you definitely taste them both.
Yeah, that's raspberry hibiscus.
Yeah. But yeah, it's
I would rather drink the banana one over that one.
Oh, then I'm going to disagree with you there. I would drink this over the banana one, but I'm really sensitive to that one. That was my Waterloo right there.
Yep, that's okay. Well, that was a good little talk about things. Definitely, let's see, next festival coming up in June, we've got Feast of St. Arnold.
Yep.
Until
Weldworks Invitational is end of June. Or is that early July?
Yeah, June 23rd, I want to say. Somewhere okay. there. End of June as well is Rapids and Grass up in Buena Vista.
Yep.
But then until May 12th, if you didn't know about it.
End of May is the Meadowgrass.
That's another one.
Beer
Jeez,
festival.
Gosh, there's too many. Game of Thrones, Game of Breweries, that seven breweries here down there.
Still going on.
Still going on until May 12th. Cards are, I think, $10, and you get a buy one, get one at every brewery. So basically one free beer
Decent
at seven
deal.
Breweries.
For
$10.
Yeah.
Some of the beers I've had some of them, they're good. Some of them are horrible. I had one that was just not good. I'm not going to say who had it, but it just was, It was a stout, and it was like they put too much black patent in it.
Oh.
And yeah,
that is such a weird thing to me now. I mean, when you're talking about stouts, and I'm going to get on my soapbox for a minute as a judge. When you're talking about stouts, there's these things called midnight wheat, you know, that impart none of that bitterness and all of that color. I mean, you can really balance that stuff out.
And body, too. And it helps you. Especially if you're running a brewery and you realize that maybe your system has got a weird efficiency. You're on one of these new brew-in-the-bag systems and you're having some issues. Use some flaked oats. Use some midnight wheat. Use some things to up the carapils in your recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Use some...
Get that body up.
You're using a homebrew, you know, glorified homebrew system. Why not use some homebrew tricks to boost your body? That was one thing. The collaboration beer we did with Lost Friend was really popular. We used 25% flaked grains in that. It was... there was... Yeah, 25%, 12% flaked oats, 13% flaked wheat.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, I think it had an entire bag of rice hulls, mm-hmm. just so we didn't get a stuck mash. But it was they're going to repeat that, and it had that, even though it fermented down to basically like 4 Play-Doh, it was smooth, it was creamy, it was silky, but it attenuated the right amount. So
right.
If you're having issues when you're or you have anybody that gives you a comment saying, oh, you know, it tastes a little thin, just take that as a chance to add some dextrins. Yeah. However you're gonna add them.
Yeah. I don't care if you sit there with a bag of maltodextrin.
Heck,
and just dump till you feel like it seems right, and then add a little more. You know, mouthfeel, especially in stouts, it's almost like there's not too much.
Yeah. Yeah, make it thick, make it chunky, make it almost chewy.
Yeah. People like their stouts like a meal.
Yeah. So, also, if you were, you know, if you're a brewer and you're having some issues, call the homebrewers. They'll help you out. They're willing to trade advice for a pint.
Yeah, we're like the world's most free consultants.
Yeah, you just charge some beer,
mm-hmm.
and they can really
a lot cheaper than other things.
Yeah, and a lot of these guys have 20 some years of experience.
Oh yeah, I mean we've got a ton of national judges. I mean I'm retaking the tasting exam to go for national this summer.
Nice.
Not that I really wanted to, but they had a local exam, and I'm like, all right, fine. Twist my arm. I'll take it again.
So yeah, as we become more, on the forefront of the Colorado beer industry here at Colorado Springs, we just need to push for a little bit more. I want to say excellence, but not to say that people haven't been going for that, but that sort of consistent incredibleness.
Yeah, demand better. If something is bad, don't be a dick, but at least say something. You know, I mean, these are people trying their best, and sometimes mistakes happen. There's nothing wrong with providing honest and polite feedback.
Yep. Don't put it on Facebook.
Yeah. Talk to the brewers. Talk to the staff.
Usually you'll get a good response. Yeah. Sometimes you might not, but that might be a chance for Facebook.
It's always worth a shot.
Or Untappd. Untappd's a great thing to just air your grievances.
Is it?
No. Man, we didn't even get into all the other like crazy things that happened in beer. But well, that's a topic for another time.
There's never a lack of crazy things happening in beer that we can talk about.
It's ridiculous. Well, thanks for listening. Check us out on Patreon. If you are listening on Patreon, you're listening to this before everyone else. Thank you for your pledge and your patronage.
We love you guys.
We do. There's only 3 of you, but that's okay.
There should be more of you. Tell your friends.
Yes, tell your friends. We're yeah, things are ramping up here. I think pretty soon, for everyone listening still to this far in, our inaugural Brewers and Board Games video series will start coming out here this summer. So keep an eye on that.
And just when you didn't think we had faces for radio, we're going to prove you wrong.
We're going to show you what we look like. Well, maybe
we'll do too, I guess.
Anyways, thanks for listening. Have a great one.
Cheers.
FH.
CBC.
CBC. So the other thing is that, you know, speaking of, you know, other breweries picking Colorado Springs, we know that there's possibly going to be another brewery that's going to be downtown is picking up. Another brewery is going to be targeting downtown. Can't say much about it yet. It's still in the works, but we from what we've heard, it's super exciting, and it's going to be awesome. But we can't say much right now. But keep your eyes out for it. Weldworks will open in July. Hoping to hear something about the next project here in a little bit. Word is Dauntless bought the old car place at
next to the old
Nevada.
Garrison Tavern / Brick House / now it's the Bench.
The Bench, yeah.
Yep.
So they're in sort of planning phase right now. They've got the building. I believe that I talked to Richard or Rob. Forget his name. I feel bad about that.
That's right. I'm terrible with names. I would not have done better.
And they're working on things. They're still working on legislation and getting the right correct licensing before they start building out, which is totally understandable.
Yeah. Something I wanted to bring up is I saw the other day that 1876, who opened for about a day, ran out of beer.
Yep.
Reopened. Without a lot of fanfare, they reopened. And last I saw the other day, they were out of beer again, except for maybe one tap. So I don't know if their system is just undersized or if they're just doing that well. But, I mean, you know, nothing against them. I haven't been there and I haven't tried their beer. I'm not going to say anything about the quality of their beer because I don't know. But, you know, you compare and contrast that to, like, the Lost Friend opening. And, you know, they didn't run out of beer. You know, really knocked it out of the park. I heard nothing but good things about their opening.
Even though people were waiting long lines, they were still happy, which is a crazy thing.
Yeah. And so I worry about a place like 1876 where I'm not hearing, you know, oh, their beers are really great. You know, I'm not hearing that buzz. And then the fact that they're constantly running out of beer. I mean, if you're running out of beer, obviously it must be decent because it's, you know, how are you running out of it otherwise? But that worries me. You know, is it poor planning? Is it not having a big enough system? You know, that's symptomatic of something going on there that isn't great.
So I don't know anything direct. Everything that I have information about their opening and the subsequent events is all sort of secondhand.
Same here.
From other people. And what I've heard is that for opening, they had 1,000 pints available, which is about 8 kegs for four barrels.
Yeah.
That's not enough.
No.
And I think that was all that they had. I don't know if they had any actually in the fermenters ready to go. I know for a fact that Lost Friend had eight kegs, eight plus kegs of each flavor that they had, and they had 10 flavors on tap.
Yeah.
So they were trying to avoid that, at least from a volume standpoint. They also want to, you know, that's the tough thing is that you want to, people always say, oh, you want to run out, but you do, but you don't, because if you're going to be open that next day after the grand opening,
what are you going to serve them?
You got to serve beer still. Exactly. Yeah. So one of the things that I think is an issue, and I don't understand why breweries are going to these systems, but there's these essentially glorified brew in a bag commercial, quote unquote, commercial systems that Elizabeth Brewing has, 1876 Brewing has, Lost Friend has one as well. I know from talking to Andy at Lost Friend, the efficiencies are horrible. There's no manway, so you have to winch it up and then dump it and then hope. I mean, if you're working with 800 pounds of grain and you're trying to winch that above your head, type of things. This is just—it's just not safe.
Hope the bag doesn't break. I mean,
well, it's a metal cylinder with a mesh bottom. But it's a weird mesh bottom. It's not like a slot like you would have if you had a nice mash system, like these Alpha systems we see people have. They have a slotted slotted, you know,
there's a drainable
filter.
Floor there.
Yeah, yeah. That filter is slotted, not a mesh. So cleaning, I know, is really difficult because they're it's basically a fine mesh that you have to then clean all of the stuff out of. That's extra work. It's also the thing that you can't. There's no easy way to get to if they either climb into the basket or winch it up and try to scrub it or spray it. It's just a lot of work, and I don't understand why this. I think it's Colorado Brewing Systems is who they are, but they're. It really doesn't work.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who it was. I just saw had literally had somebody come in and weld a Manway onto their system.
It might have been Elizabeth Brewing.
Maybe. I don't know. I saw it on Facebook. Someone said, "Oh, we got a Manway put in," and I'm like, "Well, good man. That's a step in the right direction."
Yeah, it's. I think that's the issue though is that. I was talking with Andy about it, and he's like, I just don't get great efficiencies. It's billed, his is billed as a 10-barrel system, but it's 2 5-barrel vessels that have, they're all electric, so there's electric implements in the bottom.
Mm.
But essentially, to be able to brew 10 barrels, you have to mash, but they don't have a system built so that you can then sparge, so you have to just include your mash and your sparge water, like a brew in a bag would be.
Okay.
Then pick, winch that up, drain it, somehow dump it out and empty and clean it, bring it over, mash in again on your other vessel, lift it up and drain it, and then you've got your full 10 barrels. But basically the way Lost Friend is using is they're only using one side of it because it's so much work to actually use both sides.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a system like a 7-barrel that like Cerberus has, you mash in, You empty out, you spray. You can clean out and mash back in fairly quickly.
Right.
It's not an hour upon hour long process.
Yeah. And if you have a big enough, you know, vessel to stage everything in, you know, either, you know, post boil or even pre boil, you know, rack it off somewhere and then
right.
kick it back in when you're done mashing. I don't know.
This is but. The system isn't set up for even sparging. It's based on the brew in a bag. Brewing method, which is great when you're in a water sensitive area. Like, so brew in a bag became really popular in Australia where water is super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of things like no chill brewing is big out there. Well, they'll fill a vessel and let it sit fully sealed overnight.
Yeah,
and let it ambient.
I tried it, it
worked great. It didn't you got to work on things like your whirlpool hops and things like that because it changes how that isomerized. It's crazy. It's totally different, but it's a different way of doing it. It's how they're adapting to their resources to do it. But then to do it here on a commercial size, I feel like it's not a great system. I'm just gonna be like just straight out there. It's sort of like. There are things that we do as homebrewers that would make zero sense to do on a commercial scale and just basically just straight scaled up, not like reconfigured. Because there are things like if you have a Herms, you know, recirculating system as your homebrew system and you switch up to a nice, you know, big alpha commercial system, those recirculate. They do all that same stuff, very same concept.
Yeah.
But some things, you know, running through a plate chiller, yeah, you could get a bigger, you know, or filters, things like that. Some things just don't
scale,
you know, perfectly.
Yeah.
And I really feel like these breweries are going to these systems, A, because they're cheaper, but, you know, it doesn't make a great product.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see, like, a cost-benefit analysis of that, to say... You know, if you're saving $1,000, and I don't know what the difference is between that and a system that's comparable that you know does things a little differently, but if you're saving $1,000, but you're losing, let's say 15-20% efficiency, you know, how much are you putting into each batch extra each time? How much are you losing each time you try to brew a batch? You know, to save that $1,000.
Right.
Would you have been better off spending that $1,000 or even $2,000 up front to get a better system? And then over time, you know, you're not going to, it's going to pay off better with that more expensive system.
And I think
it'd be interesting to see that.
And I don't know what everyone's paid for their systems, but I think I'd seen the systems at CBC a couple years ago. And had sort of just talked pricing, and you know, we're sitting there, these systems, you know, the bigger for like probably the 5 or 10 barrel systems like Lost Friend and Elizabeth have, I think you're sitting around the $30,000 to $40,000 for that system. Mm-hmm. Whereas that's brand new. Whereas you're working with, if you go to more of a traditional system, you're then having to work on getting a secondhand system or a second, third hand used system, but you might get that system for 60. So you're maybe saving, you know, you're spending maybe 50% that you would be spending on something else for a brand new system. So I can definitely see where it makes sense for somebody, but also I really think that there's some bits and pieces to these systems. A, no manways. Like, that's ridiculous. For a commercial outfit that needs to be brewing almost every day, pretty much, that's a lot of backbreaking work of shoveling.
That grain out's a pain.
That's a real pain. And then it's also a sanitation thing, because if they're not able to clean that screen as well and keep things really, really clean, batches down the line, you may have some additional bugs and things that are not not as favorable to what you're trying to do. So we'll see how it turns out. I was talking to Lost Friend, and it looked like I think Andy said he was doing about like a 4 to 4.5 barrel batch. He could get a really good efficiency out of that because trying to max it out, he's like, I can't do big beers on these because there's just not enough space.
That makes sense.
Because you have to include all your sparge water with it. You can't do just pack it full of grain and then, you know that you're going to be rinsing the sugars off. You got to make sure you have enough water. It's just, I think it's just too much for a commercial system.
Yeah.
And where I'm getting with this is that 1876 has one of those systems, but it's a small one. I think it's a 2x2. So it's two barrels.
Yeah, next barrel total.
So it's a 4 barrel if you're doing both sides.
Right.
It's smaller, so it's not as much work, but it's still, that's a lot of work to do 4 barrels of beer.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much fermentation space they have, but man, if you're only making 4 kegs at a time, that's painful. Because if you have a 4 to 6 hour brew day for two barrels, which is 4 kegs.
You got to be brewing around the clock at that
right.
rate.
Right. And from what I've heard, I think their head brewer has a day job, so 1876 is a nighttime spare time job, which it makes total sense. You know, I get it, but that's another thing that's tough that I know that Brass had an issue with. Their initial brewer, good guy, but lived in Denver, and so wasn't down all the time. And so you're not checking temperatures as often. You're not keeping track of, you know, how your yeast is doing, how your batches are doing. You know, if you need something needs to be racked off, you know, at a certain point, and you're waiting till maybe a day later to do it, mm-hmm. You've got autolysis from that yeast sitting there. You're going to have more issues and a little bit less control over what's going wrong. So I think that's one of those biggest issues with a small startup brewery,
right?
And from what I have also heard is that the owner is maybe a home brewer, but is not a, like a full-time inside the business type person. I think someone's used the word absentee owner, but I don't think that's true. I think they're there a lot, but I think they're more there as like, I'm the owner, not the, I'm the manager brewer, like working.
And that's,
it's the working in versus working on.
Yeah. I guess that's, and then, you know, it's acceptable if you wanted to bankroll the place and you know you're not the technical
and that's,
help.
And that's where I
so
don't know
speak.
I don't know enough to actually make a judgment on that, and that right. might be the case. So I'm not gonna pass any judgment on that, but definitely it was a Friday night and they had one beer on tap.
Yeah, that's problematic.
And it makes you as a consumer, A, yes, that's a great thing. Oh, man, you're running out of beer. But B, it also makes you, there's a little voice in the back of your head going, well, what about that one beer? Why is that one still on? Is that one good? Is that one the one that people don't like? Is that why it's still on?
Yeah. And what I'd heard, assuming we're talking about the same thing, the same post that I saw that you did, it was their hazy IPA.
Yep.
Which I'm thinking to myself, if your hazy IPA is the only one you have left, what's wrong with it? Because hazy IPAs are usually the first thing to sell through. You know,
either, that's a hot ticket item right now.
Yeah, either it was the last one on, you know, so last in, last out type of thing, or something's wrong with it. And, I mean, like I said, don't know, haven't been there, haven't tasted it, can't really say for certain. But that's what the mind wanders to when you hear that that's the only beer they got left on tap.
Right. If you weren't able to get there on that opening, one opening day, and then haven't made a point to get there again, it doesn't really instill a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it shakes out. They're in sort of a little underserved area there, so they may, just like our friends that we talked about earlier that seem to have issues but still are doing great, they may have tapped just the right little spot there that no matter what they do, they'll do fine.
Yep.
That's sort of the crazy thing about College Springs is that we have such a large area of town. There are pockets where if you throw a brewery in there and it's homebrew or better, you're going to do great.
Yeah.
Which is great, but it's also sort of detrimental to the whole scene.
A bit of a disservice in a way. But you know, you think about like even Peaks and Pines. You know, they're opening their expansion in Fountain, who has no brewery whatsoever.
Yep.
Completely underserved area. They're going to do great there. And it's certainly not like Peaks and Pines makes bad beer by any stretch. I mean, they make decent beer.
Yeah.
You know, they have some really good ones, and they're going to do well down there. And at some point, I know we're going to delve in with a little more detail on some of the things they're doing with water reclamation and
yeah, we'll have to get Paul on to talk about it because it's a lot of – they had to jump through some hoops.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it was, you know, willingly on their part because having talked to him about it, like back at the Peterson Festival when I spoke to him about that and what they were doing for that water reclamation and retention plan that they've got, they had another plan that would have been exponentially more expensive to treat and handle all the water before they dumped it into waste. And it would have cost them so much more to do it, you know, that way. So the plan they came up with, I think, is really smart. Definitely saved them a bunch of money. And, yeah, we'll definitely have to have them on here to talk about it because it's pretty slick in a way and really responsible the way they handled it.
Right. And for those of you who don't know, Fountain realized, 2 or 3 years ago that there were a bunch of PFCs in the water source.
Wasn't it from like Air Force, like fire retardants or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, so the Air Force was doing basically like drills, fire drills, and had used a bunch of fire retardant that then leached into the soil and went into the aquifer there. So there was a while there where a lot of people in Down Fountain didn't have running water that they could actually use.
Yeah.
So everyone was on bottled water, pretty much like a ecological nightmare. And so for a brewery to go, you know, beer is 95% water. So for a brewery to go in there, you know, they really had to work with the city to go, all right, so what are you going to put back down the drain? Because a lot of times, you know, grain gets into the water. There's hot particles. There's chemicals from cleaning and all that other stuff.
The caustics and all that stuff. It's, you know, it wasn't Flint bad, but it certainly wasn't good.
And it could have been worse, I think, than if they hadn't caught it.
Yeah.
So are we doing this raspberry hibiscus thing?
It's about that time.
So speaking of breweries, what's the next brewery to open in Colorado Springs? Lost Friend opened finally.
Yeah. So Dauntless, I know, is on tap. There's, you know, planned expansions for Peaks and Pines.
Fossil. Fossil's expanding. Smiling Toad's expanding or moving. I don't know of any other actual just openings.
No, opening wise, I can't really think of anything. I know Cogstone is looking at moving or creating a different location, another tap room sort of thing. I don't know where that's at. I haven't talked to them lately about it. That's.
I know Deuces Wild was looking at doing something up in the Briargate area. But that
rents up there. I think that's
what happened is they looked at the cost per square foot and was like, this is not worth it.
Yeah. And it's absolutely an underserved area, but it's underserved for a reason. You can't put, you know, a light manufacturing brewery type thing up in those areas.
Well, and that's I had somebody comment when they, you know, found out that Weldworks was going into the west side. They're like, "Well, what about Briargate? Like there's a lot of stuff there, but there's no, you know, brewery there." And I'm like, "Well, A, if you're an outside place coming into Colorado Springs, you don't want to be lost among a sea of chains." Mm-hmm. So like the Promenade shops right there, where, you know, the Apple store's there, they got Gap, you've got PF Chang's, you got Panera. Yeah. It's all these big box, not big box, but big chain companies and restaurants. And so, yes, you could put a little Weldworks tap room in there, great. But the problem is that I feel like the majority of the customers that go to there would not appreciate it.
Yeah, it's, and I'm sorry if this sounds a little off color, but, you know, it'd be a nice place to drop your husband off while you're shopping, ladies. But at the same time, you know, I don't think in a mall is the best place to put a tap room or brewery.
No,
you want to be in more of a like food centric hub. And I know just north, or sorry, just east of there, there's that place that has the basil and barley pizza place.
Yeah, which is a weird spot if you've ever been up there.
It's more difficult to get to than it should be.
It's also impossible to see. Like, right. It's up on a weird hill.
Yeah.
You have to drive around just to actually see it.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Great views when you're up there. Great food, too. That basil and barley, is like the pizzas, is incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, that would be an ideal location for something like that. But again, you're talking about, you know, exponential rents.
Everything's expensive.
And, you know, in that case, a little too hard to find.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is just me speaking selfishly, maybe, but like the west side of Monument could use a tap room.
Yeah.
You know, put something up there. I mean, Pike's Peak's across the highway. You know, even another brewery up there wouldn't be bad, you know, on the west side across the highway from Pike's Peak. People would support it. I mean, we're not that far up from the Air Force Academy. You know, there's a certain amount of clientele we'd get from there, certainly. And it's a nice, you know, waypoint between here and Castle Rock before you brave the gap.
Yeah, exactly.